You are listening to the sound of the human heart. Your heart is the toughest, yet one of the most vulnerable of the vital organs in your body. When your heart beats like this, then your chances of living longer are good. But once you abuse your heart, you never can repair or replace it, for God gives only one to a customer.
Living, 1949, brought to you each week at this time by NBC and its affiliated stations, holds up its radio mirror today to reflect your greatest physical enemy, America's number one killer, heart disease, in a drama document entitled,
Only One to a Customer.
Your narrator, Ben Grauer.
Greetings, America. Today's is no subject for the lightly turned phrase, the glib narrative. Today, facts are of the essence. And so, with no further preamble, here they are.
One out of every 20 of you listening to us today suffers from diseases of the heart and blood vessels.
One out of every 5 of you over 45 has some form of heart disease. The number one killer of the American people is heart disease.
Yes, America, heart disease is our greatest cause of death. Kills 3 times as many of us as cancer, 6 times as many of us as accidents, 10 times as many as pneumonia, 12 times as many as tuberculosis. Nor does this disease pause to consider whom it will strike down, nor whom it will disable. A little girl, her life ahead of her, whistling on her way to school. Suddenly, crippled or gone because of what doctors call rheumatic fever. Rheumatic fever, a form of heart disease, the leading cause of death among children from 5 to 19, second highest among young adults up to 24. A carpenter, hard at work in the prime of life. Suddenly, no longer there because of
coronary heart disease.
Coronary heart disease, chief attacker of people in the middle and later years of life. So you see, this enemy of ours, which by the way appears in as many as 20 or more forms or types, is no respecter of age, sex, or occupation. And it is estimated that by 1960, 1,200,000 of us each year may be its victims. But we can take hope from the following. According to the American Heart Association's report on the heart,
if you have heart trouble today, you're better off than you would have been at any previous time in the history of the world. This is because of new advances in medicine, more than one developed since World War II, that make it possible to do much for heart sufferers that was never possible before.
Today, so that you may better understand both the disease and the hope, we bring you the story of one man and one man's heart. Come in, Doctor.
Thank you, Mr. Grauer. I invite you again to listen to the actual amplified sound of the human heart. What I want to point out here is that most people start out in life with a good, strong heart that sounds like this. With the heart going busily about its work, contracting about 70 times a minute, millions of times in a long lifetime, pumping 9 to 10 tons of blood through the body in a single day. Most people, I say, start out in life with a good, sturdy heart like this. And I am, of course, including the patient I'm going to tell you about, noted in my records as
George C. Wheeler.
George Wheeler began no differently than most of us begin. Normal, active, loving life, and ambitious for success. I guess from the time he was a child, anything he put his mind to, he worked pretty hard at. In high school, where George played football, I'm willing to bet the coach used to say,
"Now, if I had a couple of more guys like Georgie Wheeler, maybe we'd have a team."
In college, and this I know for a fact because I saw his yearbook, they took a 4 years look at George and then voted
busiest man on the campus?
George Wheeler.
Most likely to succeed?
George Wheeler.
And he did succeed, financially, in the business world. He became chief of the marketing division of a large electrical supply house and quickly earned a reputation for himself.
Yeah, take that up with George Wheeler.
But George has already got more than he can handle.
George, listen, George dotes on work. Can do more than any 4 men in the office.
He was the spark plug of the local Rotary, chairman numerous civic drives, and of course was popular socially. The Wheelers were invited everywhere.
Oh, listen, George, we're counting on you. It wouldn't be a party without you, old man.
And George usually went early and stayed late, apparently able to do with hardly any sleep at all. But then things began to happen to George. Little things at first, which he felt were scarcely worth another thought. Like the time he bought seats at the big game for himself and his wife and had to climb high up in the stadium to get to it.
Why, George, you're actually puffing.
That surprised her. George is puffing. Surprised George, too, but it didn't seem like anything to worry about. Then there's the time he went on that fishing trip.
Say, where's George?
Oh, he went back to the shack. Said he had indigestion, pain in his chest.
George Wheeler? Oh, I'll be darned. I guess the old boy must be slipping.
Yeah.
George finally spoke about this to a doctor friend of his, one of the many parties.
You better drop around to the office, George, and let me give you the once-over. You say, you're putting on a lot of extra weight, aren't you?
Mm-hmm. George was. But somehow he never got around to see the doctor. Well, I think that's enough to let you know the kind of man George Wheeler was and what had been happening up to the time I made his acquaintance. Now, I think I'll let you meet him yourself. On the day it happened at the office.
Yes, Mr. Wheeler?
Ernie, get me Delaney in St. Louis. Hurry.
Anything wrong, Mr. Wheeler?
Wrong? Somebody lost track of 200 refrigerators, that's all, and bring in your pamphlets and dictation.
Yes, sir. Soon as I put in the St. Louis call. Uh-oh. Here we go again.
Sit down, Gertie. Let's not waste any time.
I put in for St. Louis. We'll get the call in here when it comes through.
Okay, take a letter, please. Jim Delaney, et cetera, et cetera. Dear Jim, I don't like to write letters like this. What, when for the third time in 2 months we lose track of a shipment to St. Louis?
Wheeler?
My chest.
Wheeler. Mr. Wheeler, what's wrong? What's the matter? Mr. Wheeler!
A long time, no one thought to answer the call to St. Louis. Do you want to know what happened to Mr. Wheeler, what was wrong? Listen, here's how he described it to me later.
The pain, it hit me all of a sudden, right here in the center of my chest. It was like hands, great stone hands pushing in, crushing me, pushing against that one spot. I couldn't breathe. I started to sweat. Oh, it hurt so much. And suddenly it began to travel down my left arm. And I had to vomit. And then everything went.
The first time I saw George C. Wheeler was at the hospital, shortly after he'd been given an injection of morphine and taken there in an ambulance. I guess you realize by now that what had happened was that he'd had a heart attack. I was called in by his family physician because I'm a heart specialist. My job was to do what I could to save him. I found him still in great pain.
My chest, doctor.
Yeah, I know. I'm going to examine you right now.
Pain, doctor.
We won't be long, Mr. Wheeler. I listened to George Wheeler's heart. This is what I heard. I wonder if you notice any difference between the sound of George Wheeler's heart and the normal sound of a healthy heart. Listen again to the sound of George Wheeler's heart. That sound, plus all the other factors, led me to confirm the clinical analysis that George Wheeler had a form of heart disease known as coronary thrombosis. This was verified by the electrocardiograph, machine that enables us to measure the electrical impulse waves immediately preceding the heart's beat. Returning immediately to the patient's room.
What's wrong, doctor? What's the trouble?
I think you need to know you've had a very severe heart attack.
Will I?
If you do as we say, I believe you'll come out of it all right.
Oh, I can hardly breathe.
I'm going to take care of that right now. Nurse, order an oxygen tent for this patient at once.
And the pain... Oh, God, the pain.
I'm going to give you another hypodermic, Mr. Wheeler. That'll stop the pain, help you rest. From here on, you're going to need all the rest you can get. For 3 days, George Wheeler lived with only an oxygen tent between himself and his maker. For 3 days, until his condition was improved, until he was out of the most acute stage of the disease. When the oxygen tent was removed, George Wheeler and I had our second talk. How do you feel, Mr. Wheeler?
Better.
Don't try to sit up. Don't make any unnecessary move.
Yes, doctor.
You want to know all about everything. You want to know what we mean by heart disease, coronary thrombosis, what it's going to mean to you, all that.
How'd you know?
Mr. Wheeler, do you know much about the heart?
No, I don't.
I didn't think so. Usually no one has any reason to get familiar with their insides until... Well, here, let me pull up a chair. Now, relax now. Let me do the talking. I think I know what you want to know. It'll be easier for you that way. Wheeler, your heart is a mass of tissues and muscle about the size of a clenched fist, located here on the left side of the chest.
I am the human heart. I am a more intricate machine than a watch. Listen to me and learn how I tick. Doctors say I can be compared to a house divided into a duplex by a partition running down my middle. On each side of me, one room upstairs, one room downstairs. They've even given the rooms names. The two upstairs ones they call oracles. The two downstairs ones, ventricles. And they say each side has a chimney. That's what they call the two great arteries leading out of me. The one on the right side goes to the lung. The one on the left feeds the blood to the rest of the body. Want to take a trip through me? Okay. Let's say you're a blood corpuscle. One of millions that pass through every second. And right now, you've just taken the long journey all around the body and are coming back again. Let's pick you up in a vein leading to me.
Oh, boy. I sure am tired after that trip. Miles, miles, miles. Blue, too. Carrying a lot of carbon dioxide.
You come in upstairs on the room to the right. Remember the right oracle.
Oh, always liked this room. Smooth walls. Nice.
You move on to the valves, separating this upstairs room from the downstairs room. A sort of trapdoor on hinges. Join your fellow corpuscles to wait for the valves to open.
Hi, gang!
Hi!
When I beat, the valves open. And?
Oh, boy! Down we go!
Now downstairs on the right ventricle, you mingle with your brothers until you're pumped out of my first chimney to the lung. The lungs, you see, are where you dump your carbon dioxide and pick up oxygen. Now you're full of new life and zip, and red color again.
Yes, sir!
You sail back to me, but this time come into my left side, top room. Here you wait for the second set of valves to open. And slide downstairs, and there wait to be pushed up through the second chimney, the aorta, to other parts of the body.
Hey! Hey, let's go! Let's go!
You pass up through this chimney, and then move onto smaller arteries that go further into the body. After a while, you reach the capillaries. A sort of tissue-thin swampland of passages. And here, the body cells go to work on you and take away your oxygen and nutriment. You take on carbon dioxide. That turns you blue. and makes you tired.
Oh, me. I'm tired.
And so you start your trip through the veins back to the heart again to repeat the whole process.
But, Doctor, where does the coronary thrombosis come in?
Well, there are two coronary arteries above the heart that supply the heart muscle with blood, one for each side of the heart. Now, in the case of coronary thrombosis, somehow a blood clot is formed that blocks the passage. Can't you imagine what happens then?
Hey! Hey, can't get by! Let me through! Let me through!
The heart muscle is affected, of course.
I can't get blood. I can't get blood.
The muscle fibers normally fed by that blood that can't get through become useless to the heart. But it still struggles along despite that, until the muscle fibers are replaced by strong scar tissue, and the heart works out some way of bypassing the obstruction. Our problem is to get you over these first days, while the heart is performing this job and working out a method of feeding its muscles without relying on that plugged artery.
How long will that take?
It depends on you. The less work your heart has to put in on working for the other parts of your body, the less strain, the more work it can put on this job. That's why I want you to be quiet.
But will I get well?
Oh, anything can happen with coronary thrombosis, including recovery.
And so modern science goes to work on George Wheeler. It is now a struggle for survival, and George Wheeler knows it perhaps better than anyone else. The basic essential, rest. Rest needed to permit the formation of scar tissue. And to that end, first, a nurse.
I'm Miss Murphy, Mr. Wheeler.
A nurse to remain by his bedside day and night. A nurse to bathe and feed him, to care for him as if he were once again an infant in his mother's arms. A nurse to say...
No, sir.
When he seeks to do things for himself. For 2 weeks, he can only see his wife or any one member of his family, and only for a few minutes.
Oh, George, I wish you wouldn't talk like that.
Well, you need to know these things, Madge. Joe Allen has the will that I made out. Everything is in order about the house. And you know where my insurance papers are, just in case.
George.
The doctor comes frequently and always with the same story.
Rest. Give your heart a chance to heal. Let the other blood vessels in your heart compensate for the closed artery by taking over the work. Later, we'll gradually return you to a normal routine, but only rest and relaxation will help now.
Thus, the first few weeks pass, with George Wheeler too weak to protest much. Nothing to do but lie in bed.
Dinner, Mr. Wheeler. Smell good?
To see his family for a few minutes.
You're looking better, George. Really you are.
But then comes the third week.
I think, Miss Murphy, we can let Mr. Wheeler have books now.
Very well, Doctor.
Say.
And if he wants, he can have a radio in here.
Oh, say, thank you, Doctor.
But bigger to George Wheeler even than that is the fact that this magic third week, other people can come to see him. One of the first is his boss. Cigar and all.
Well, well, George, you don't look like a sick man to me. Just a ruse of yours to get out of some work, eh? Well, you'll be glad to know everything's moving along as usual without you, so take all the time you need. Don't worry, everything's fine.
Afterwards, somewhat exhausted by this visit, George Wheeler, the indispensable man, really begins to worry.
Moving along as usual without you?
Yes, it's a hard blow for anyone to take, that this old world will go right on spinning without us. Next time the doctor shows up, he hears about it.
When am I going to get up, Doc? I didn't mind it the first few weeks, but every day is like a week now.
And the doctor starts all over again.
Look, Mr. Wheeler, your heart has been overworked with worry and exertion. It's going to take a lot longer for you to snap back. You're suffering from the number one health problem of middle and old age. Here you are grumbling like a schoolboy who's just been taken off the football team.
Okay, Doc.
Five weeks after the attack, George Wheeler is taken home.
Easy now, Mr. Wheeler.
His nurse still by his side. And again, as any doctor can tell you...
Tired of hospital food and regulation, the impatient patient, weary but glad to be home, invariably suggests...
How about some food, Madge? What do you say we celebrate with a plate of your spaghetti covered with tomato and meat sauce and heaped all over with grated cheese?
A big, heavy meal. Of course, on my visit, I have to put a damper on that.
But, Doc...
Nothing doing. How many times must I remind you that overweight puts another strain on the heart? What you have to do is lose some weight.
In good time, George Wheeler is sitting up.
There. How's that, Mr. Wheeler?
Okay, there's, well, maybe I could use another pillow up a little higher.
Slowly, he begins to recover his strength. But the next big event, the first trip downstairs, doesn't come off as happily as anticipated.
Nurse. Nurse.
Yes? Yes, Mr. Wheeler?
I think I'm ready to go back to bed now.
And now it's 3 months since A-Day, attack day, and George Wheeler is chafing at the bit.
Look, Doc, I just don't see why I can't go to the office.
What's this?
I'm as good as I ever was.
Wait a minute now. Let's start there. You're not as good as you ever were. Get that straight. And you never will be.
You mean I'll never be able to work?
Oh, I didn't say that. What I mean is you still have a heart condition. You always will have a heart condition. Any attempt to go back to your former way of life may mean curtains for you. You understand that?
I understand
now,
that.
Now, on the other hand, there's not a thing in the world to stop you from going on and completing a long and fruitful life. But you've got to play the game with different rules.
What do you mean?
Easy does it. When the phone rings, you don't jump to answer it. You never, ever hurry, no matter what. You get plenty of rest. Think you can do it?
I've got to, that's all. I want to go on living just like the next guy.
Well, it's up to you. Remember, you're not the only one. Thousands of people in this country right now are fighting the same kind of battle.
Four months then after the first attack, George Wheeler is ready to resume life. First, an unannounced trip to the office just to say hello.
Hey, gang, look who's here.
Hey, George!
How are you doing?
But the real test comes when George Wheeler is permitted to work a few hours. A few hours a day to start. The question in his mind, the question in his doctor's mind is...
Will George Wheeler remember his slow-down approach to life?
Greetings over, everyone gone. George Wheeler sinks into the familiar chair behind his desk. It's a time to make his heart pound in spite of himself. Will George Wheeler begin now to remember? Or will George Wheeler write his own death warrant? Carefully, he reaches over to the intercommunication system box in his desk... presses the buzzer.
Yes, Mr. Wheeler?
Gertie, get me Delaney in St. Louis. No hurry.
So one of 4 million Americans who today has some form of heart disease resumes, with the help of medical science, his useful life again. No one, friends, really knows for certain the cause of coronary heart disease. But every day, science is learning more about the human heart and about prevention as well as treatment.
Above all, learn the facts about heart disease. Remember, there are more than 20 different forms of it. And rest assured, not all of these are fatal. Find out all the facts about your own heart by having periodic checkups with your doctor. And be sure to...
rest and exercise.
Not too much and not too little. But above all, relax. You relax and your heart does. This is the heart's greatest secret, its magic reservoir of power.
There's a lot more that science must know if it is to protect us against this public enemy. This is the type of work being done by the American Heart Association. It may serve to be your insurance for a long lifetime ahead.
Your heart is the toughest, yet one of the most vulnerable vital organs in your body. When your heart beats like this, your chances of living longer are good. But once you abuse your heart, you can never repair nor replace it. For God gives only one to a customer.
Living 1949 is prepared and presented for the University of the Air by an NBC special program staff under the supervision of Wade Arnold. Your narrator was Ben Grauer and Kermit Murdoch was our doctor. Music is composed by Milton Katims. Lou Haslam writes the scripts. This program is directed by Jack Cuney. Our thanks to the American Heart Association and its New York affiliate for their help in research. We invite you to keep abreast of Living 1949 by listening next week to a progress report to George Washington titled,
Who Rides the Tiger? Hear Fred Allen's Sunday comedy on NBC.